Hello, you amazing people out there, and welcome to the Amazing Action Comics Podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I'm one of your hosts, Angel, with Ja Pepe.
How's it going, Angel?
Woo! It's like it's been weeks since we've done a podcast.
Since last week, right? 2 weeks, yeah. It's funny because
we're not 2 weeks.
2 weeks since the last one, I think, yeah.
No. We went skip last week because they were.
We skipped last week, but 2 calendar weeks.
Oh shit! Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
But yeah, because it's funny because there really wasn't enough books last week for us to really feel like we were gonna have enough to review, and so we canceled it on Wednesday, and it turned out I had another internet problem on Thursday, so I couldn't have done it on Thursday anyway last week. So that was that was interesting that worked out.
Yeah, you need to move, bro.
Well, apparently the new battery that they put in after the last one got knocked out by that truck or whatever, just crapped out. It was like a brand new battery, backup battery in the basement, and just crapped out. So I had to have a technician come and replace it. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Unnamed wireless internet provider is just not always good.
Yes, that's how it works. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Indie Comic Review. This is episode 112. We do have a couple of books for you this week. But before we hop into that, I know that, John, you have some news that you want to share with us.
Yes.
Got some stuff that we're going to share as well before we get started. We've got 2 books for you to this week. It's going to be really super light, but I think it's going to be a fun week. So,
yeah.
All right, what do you got?
Well, first and foremost, thank you for being fully comfortable with calling me John and not Phil. You don't have that hitch anymore.
It's taking me so much willpower. It's like saying the F you or motherfucker word. It doesn't feel right.
But here's where we're at now. I get surprised now whenever you say John. You're smooth, and I'm like waiting for Phil, and it's so I get confused. So you're calling me John, and I'm like, oh yeah, me.
I'm gonna wash my tongue out after this anyway. Go for it.
So look, you know what? It's 4th of July weekend, so happy Independence Day, everybody. And a couple of things I just wanted to talk about really quick. First and foremost, I mentioned a couple months ago that I was going to have Yankees empresario, we'll call him, baseball historian Marty Appel on, and that never happened. It's happening tonight, actually. So I'm doing a very special Thursday night episode of the Pep Talk with Marty Appel, former PR director for the New York Yankees during the dynasty in the late 70s, has written Pinstripe Empire, one of the best books on the history of the Yankees, great biography about Casey Stengel. We're going to be talking about his new book, Pinstripes by the Tail, Half a Century in and Around Yankees Baseball. Awesome. So that'll be live tonight at 9 o'clock. And then it'll be archived thereafter. I will definitely have the link on my one social, which is the Facebook. And then if I can remember, I think at least on the YouTube, I'll pop a link on that at some point in the next couple days. So if you are interested in baseball and talking to a guy who really knows baseball, not Batman, but that guy, Marty Appel. That's going to be a really fun show. Marty could only give us about a half hour, so I'm backing him up with one of my really good friends, Matthew Demick, who is a huge Yankee fan, and I refer to him as a real-life Zelig. So that's a very obscure reference for a very old Woody Allen film from the 80s, basically about a guy who kind of winds up in every pivotal moment in history, sort of a pre-Forrest Gump. So Matt has met a ton of extraordinary people, both in the Yankees world and beyond. So he's going to be really fun to sort of talk about what Marty talked about, and then we're going to riff a little bit after that. So it'll be really good. And then I have another episode this Sunday of the Pep Talk, July 2nd, with another good old friend, Brian Scambotti, who is an actor. And we're going to talk about his actor's journey from, you know, deciding to become an actor, being a journeyman actor, and now being a teacher. But if you watch The Blacklist, it's a show, I think, on NBC with James Spader, tonight's episode, directed by Andrew McCarthy, no less, actually has my friend Brian in the episode tonight. So I have never seen The Blacklist, but Brian has been in enough shows that are very popular that I've at least watched one episode of because he's been in them. So yeah, tonight on NBC on The Blacklist, you'll see Brian Scambotti, and we'll talk about that on Sunday on the Pep Talk. Nice. That's about it. Other than that, I don't know if I mentioned the last couple months I've been feeding the stray cat. We've been feeding the stray cat in our backyard. That one stray cat has now become six. So we have a family of kittens under our porch right now, the mom is doing well, really taking care of them. I watched her this morning scare off the groundhog in our backyard. That was very interesting. What's going on in there.
Yeah, do you have a Chinese restaurant in the neighborhood?
A few. So there's enough to go around, but we're looking to actually adopt them out first. So.
Holy crap. That's crazy, bro. You're insane. There's the one that's like, probably two of the worst smells on the planet: skunks and cat piss.
And cat, like, cat piss.
Really, really close. All right, cool. Well, it sounds like you have freaking solid night tonight.
Yes.
This weekend, so you have a lot of planning and talking to do. So that's all.
Of talking, yeah.
All right, good. So with that being said, it's been a while since we've had guests on the show as well, and I think we have two that are lined up. We definitely have one next week. We're going to talk to indie creator Scott Ford,
Ooh,
who currently has an Instagram. I'm an Instagram, you hear me? Kickstarter going on. And he has this book called The Hologram Hunter that he has on Kickstarter that he wants to get published out there and printed. So we're going to talk to him next week. It's a pretty cool concept. I mean, outside of the story itself, I'm pretty sure there's been stuff in the past, but it goes back and forth from 2D pages. So you actually have glasses, the red and blue 3D glasses, and part of the story is this 3D world. It takes place in a 3D world. So it hops from, you know, the comic 2D world into this, you know, whatever universe that he has that he's created in 3D, which is pretty cool. It's a cool concept. So
yeah,
it comes with the 3D glasses and everything. So I read the storyline on it. So we'll have Scott on next week, and we'll chat him up about it and get more on it. But it sounds really interesting. I love, like, when they do things with the medium that's kind of unique, but we haven't seen in quite some time. The only thing I don't like is, what was that comic that had the ring on it, or the gem?
Yes, I love talking about this. The worst thing ever. The DC annual event from 93.
Right.
DC 93. The summer annual event, Eclipso, the Darkness Within. And yeah, the cover had a picture of like Eclipso holding his little Eclipso gem, and they weren't content with just having it drawn on there. They actually put a piece of plastic glued to the cover of the book,
which is the worst.
Ruined so many books when they shipped. And how do you store something like that? I love that as like probably the absolute worst cover gimmick.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I mean, it's a gimmick, but a gimmick is a gimmick. But yeah, this seems pretty cool. So we'll have him on next week, along with our regular review. So we do have an indie creator. And then a couple of weeks after that, we have another guest that we're working with as well. So there you have it. So you have, John has a couple of things going on tonight. So we'll see if we can get that into the link as well. We'll get the links in there, so you guys can head over there tonight and listen to his podcast as well as what he has going on Sunday. Yeah, that's all that we have for you there. So let's hop right into it. So the indie comic review for this week, we have two books. We're going to let John go first, and he's off.
All right. So the first book I have is from IDW. It is called Bryn Mawr, and this is given to us, is written by Steve Niles, illustrated by Damian Worm, with assists by Alicia Zerno, lettered by Tyler Esposito, edited by David Marriott, design and production Nathan Wittick. So, you know, it's really interesting. I think there was another book by Steve Niles that we did not too long ago. I want to say it was called A Town Called Terror, but I might be mistaken with that, with Zyman Kudransky.
Yeah, I think so.
Who's killing it with Something Epic, by the way. Zyman, great job.
Oh, I love it.
I'm loving that book.
And he's doing it solo, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a one man show. I love a one man band on that one. It's so good. So Steve Niles, really, as I mentioned last time we reviewed something by him, Steve Niles really broke into comics as far as creating a real solid name for himself with IDW, probably IDW's first big hit, 30 Days of Night, which was optioned and turned into a really good movie adaptation of the book. And it is a really great, unique looking book written by Steve Niles, illustrated by Ben Temple Smith, and really kind of edged, you know, into that big vampire zombie wave, I think, that we saw in the early 2000s, along with finding these horror properties in comics and adapting them for film and television. And I love 30 Days a Night. The original series is really good. There have been tons of sequels, including, I think, an X-Files crossover, which actually wasn't terrible. That was actually really good. So that was a great and very unique thing. And I've liked a lot of what Steve has done since then. Now, some of it does sort of live parallel or tangential in style and tone to 30 Days of Night. But Steve Niles is such a really good writer because he's not overly wordy, and he really gives you, the information you need to really digest what's going on. And the way he does disseminate information is great. He's perfectly paced as far as his writing goes. And Bryn Mawr number one is no different. So we basically have a protagonist who has just been through a divorce, and he's got a teenage daughter who is, you know, the mom got custody. And he goes back to his ancestral island off the coast of North Carolina. Basically, this was a land that was, founded and settled by his ancestors, by his family. But he is so far removed from that that he's very much an outsider in this town, specifically in this town and on this island, I believe. And he decides he's gonna go back there. Buy an old church that has not been up and running for some time. So it's a sort of derelict church, and he's going to fix it up and turn it into a house, you know, and which is kind of a neat concept in of itself. I've been to some houses that used to be churches that were converted. It's very interesting to kind of be in that type of dwelling. And so basically, obviously, he is ostracized because he is not part of that community. And so there is an altercation with a townie, again, part of that setup, building that world, and letting you experience all this through this gentleman's eyes. He does meet one friendly person, so I'm sure she's going to come into play later on as far as someone who he can talk to. And then there was a dog that showed up the day he showed up to start fixing up this church, who he fed once. Now the dog is just with him, right, his companion. So really cool setup, really interesting main character that you are following. The reason his marriage fell apart, and there's a great scene. He talks about how his marriage fell apart because he got it. You know, he wasn't a present husband. It's not that he was abusive or violent towards his wife. He just wasn't there. And part of why he wasn't there was because of his addictions, his alcohol and drug addictions, which he is now recovering. And there is a great scene in this book where a lot of stuff is just sort of getting to him on his first day in this town. And he goes and he drives to the liquor store, and he just sits outside of the liquor store and for several panels, and you can really get that sense of his struggle. And then he just goes, no, and he drives away. And I thought that was really cool. Mm. Now, this being a Steve Niles joint, this is a horror book. The horror elements are very subdued in this first issue, and you really get a taste of it towards the end of the first issue as he decides, instead of losing himself in the bottle, he's going to lose himself in the work. And so he goes and he just starts throwing the pews out, starts gutting the church, and then finds a secret passageway under the altar in the church that has something down below in the basement of the church. And that is a really cool hook, and it's a great way to sort of end this first chapter. So I love that he put, you know, the banality of the everyday life, the outsider experience, the man's struggle with his, you know, his ex-wife and his non-communicative daughter as well, you know, because she's a teenager and she doesn't want to talk to any of her parents, as well as him trying to settle into this town and do this task that's going to make him feel better. I love that that's all up front, And now the really scary shit can begin, right? And so that's kind of how Niles does a lot of his pacing. So really well-paced first issue. Really think that this is going to be a really fun series. I'm guessing it's a mini because a lot of these IDW originals are now minis. Steve Niles also mainly doesn't do a lot of like super long story arcs too. So really looking forward to this. I really love the artwork that is given to us by Damian Worm. And my only thing is with the color palette choice. So I've noticed a lot, and I know you watch a lot of the DC animated movies, and you know how in the last 10 years or so, there's sort of like this weird hazy filter over all of the, if you go and look back at like animation from like the 90s and early 2000s, like look at Superman Batman Public Enemies, but then look at something more recent. It has this weird haze over it, right? And it blurs the crispness like of the image. Yeah. It's like a soft filter on animation. This does a very similar thing with the color palette. And in some scenes, it works. Like when you're pulling into that island and you see, you know, this double page spread of the of what, you know, what he is seeing as he's coming into this island in North Carolina, and the way the sky is colored, I mean, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. However, there are some scenes in this book where it is a little too dark for the line work that the artist is doing. And it's a very similar color palette that Ben Templesmith was using for 30 Days of Night. And if you know Ben Templesmith's art, it's very scratchy, sketchy, and dark. And it really lends itself to that art style. Damian Worm's art style is a little more of a traditional comic book style. His faces and figures are very... a little Todd McFarlane in my mind, in the way that he just draws faces and body types, not like action Todd stuff, but like conversational Todd stuff. And so I felt that in some of these scenes, a little bit more of a lighter color palette, a little bit less of that filter, making it less a Ben Templesmith and letting Damian Worm's actual, you know, art line style really shine through. I felt would have been, in my opinion, a better reading experience, a very visual reading experience. That is a very minor quibble on what is actually a really good comic. So
you enjoyed it?
I really enjoyed it. Best comic book ever. Well, no. But really good pick this week. I really liked it.
All right, cool. All right, so Bryn Mawr, guys, from IDW. Check it out if you wish. All right, so moving on. So I have the next and final book. This is called Rocky 10. Well, I mean, Creed, the next round.
Rocket 10.
I mean, it might as well be called Rocky 10. So, I mean, all right, if you don't know, if you've been under a rock, this is part of, you know, the Rocky legacy. And I was, you know, I'm going back and I'm doing some research, right? And I'm like, all right, Rocky's been around since 1976. That's when the first movie came out, right? So this is not Rocky, but this falls off of it. This is part of that whole universe that Rocky, you know, started off and built. And it's funny how a lot of these things, including Star Wars, was never meant to go beyond, you know, that first movie. Mm-hmm. And here you have 90,000 Star Wars movies and offshoots. It just goes to show that when you have something great or something that, you know, that almost feels tangible to people that they can relate to, that you can just kind of get it going on forever. And I think Sylvester Stallone, when he did Rocky, just hits so many emotions tonally. It was just really grounded. It was, you know, the one of the greatest underdog stories to this day. And you go through every single one of the movies until you get to 5 and you feel that way, and then you get to 5 and you're like, what the this it made a turn. But we're not going to go into that because that's gonna be a tangent. And you know what, it is what it is. Most people don't enjoy 5, but I will tell you this: if it's on the screen on the TV and it's playing on just regular on by itself, I will let it play and I probably will watch it. And then we go into his final, which would have been Rocky. That was his
Rocky Balboa.
Balboa. Yeah.
I love that movie. That movie's great.
Yeah, exiting out of there. And then we get into the Creed universe and the Creed trilogy that we had right after that. And it was really good because the segue was, you know, this is Adonis Creed. This is, you know, the love child of, oh my God, what is his name? Apollo Creed.
Apollo Creed, yeah.
Yeah, so his the mother that's in the movie is not his mother. That's, you know, his stepmom or whatever it is.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a love child, isn't it?
I've never actually seen the Creed movies, so.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
I know. And I know that Creed 2 has like Rocky and Drago facing off in some.
Don't go. I'm not that far yet. Stop ruining it.
You've never seen Creed 2?
There's spoilers for people. All right. So then we find out that, you know, this is Adonis Creed's son, and Rocky finds him, and they sort of have like this mentor relationship like he had with Rocky had with Mickey, mm-hmm. in that respect. So he takes him in and starts training him, and he has his first fight, and whatever it is he's going through. And Rocky Creed 2 is the continuation of this old battle that we saw between Rocky and the Russian in Rocky 4. And I thought it was really great to be able to tie back way to back then, you know, have Drago have a son to try to redeem his family's name for losing that battle that he had with, you know, Rocky mm-hmm. at the end there. So that was pretty cool. And to kind of see at the very end of that one, and spoiler, if you haven't seen it, fuck, this movie's been out already for years. it just takes these pivotal moments that you had in the movie that just kind of circle back around. And in Rocky IV, that's when Apollo dies. So this is, you know, the Russian killing Rocky because Rocky didn't throw in the towel in time.
Yeah.
And so now we get to Creed 2, and you have Adonis Creed, which is Apollo's son, literally beating the shit out of Drago's son, who could probably kill him in a ring. But what does Drago do? He throws in a towel. So there's this great symbolism that happens between that first Rocky 4 or that first, you know, encounter between Drago and Rocky to what happens in Creed 2. So, you know, if you're going from Rocky 1 all the way through until Creed number 2, there's so many differences in the movie. It just feels like it's adding on to each legacy. It's not repeating the same thing. Even though the stories are all based around what's going on in the ring, it's what's outside to the characters. And then we get to Creed 3, which is, you know, sadder unto itself because this is the first one that we don't see Sylvester Stallone in. And from what I'm understanding, and I may not have the whole thing right, is there was some discrepancies with, I think, one of the producers. Because I didn't know that that Sylvester Stallone didn't own the rights to Rocky.
Right, yeah.
So that was signed away in 1976 when he sold the script. So that was just, that's a done deal kind of thing. So I think it's kind of bounced around, and this one producer was just like, I guess they were at heads. And they were like, nope, we don't want him on the movie, whatever it is. So it was just really weird to have that kind of dynamic where you had really good first two movies with them in it, and just they hit it off, and it was a really good dynamic, you know, of mentor and student, you know, like uncle and nephew, because that's kind of like what he was calling them uncle, mm-hmm. In that respect. And then to have him not in the third one, and it almost be like a Rocky 3 with like Mr. T. Kind of thing, but this was more like someone that he grew up with, and they had a falling out, he went to jail, come back, and then you have their rivalry, and then obviously he's winning. But this is where we get introduced to his daughter, Amara, in Creed 3. So with Creed, the next round, by Boom Studios, we're going to get the continuation of that story, which is 10 years later from the movie itself. So this is going to be Amara grown up, and it takes off from there. So this is
Adonis's daughter?
Correct.
So she's the granddaughter of Apollo Creed.
That's correct.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And then we get some more family members that are thrown into the mix here, which is kind of funky. I like it. So Creed the Next Round from Boom Studios. You got writers, LaToya Morgan and Jay Jameson. Art by Wilton Santos. Colors, DJ Chavez. And letters by Ann World Design. So, yeah, so if you're familiar with it, they have a daughter. I think she was pregnant in 2, and then daughter was born in 3, and she's a lot older. I believe she's in her, like, probably 10, 11. His wife, who I forget her name at the moment, is a singer, creative talent. She does her own music and stuff like that, slowly losing her hearing. So she has a disease where she's losing her hearing. They have a kid. The kid is actually born deaf. So Amara is born deaf. So here we see her 10 years later, and we see Adonis actually training his daughter. And it's one of these things where it's funny because as a dad of a daughter, I can relate to a lot of what's going on in here. So basically you have his daughter who's really, you know, hard-headed like he is, wanted to do all of these things that he did when he was younger. But as a father, all he wants to do is protect her. So she is fighting, but she's being fed sort of like what she feels are these easy fights. So she doesn't really have to work that hard to beat these guys. So she ends up playing a lot in the ring. And her father wants to be a little bit more disciplined before she actually gets, you know, somebody who's going to be really competitive because he doesn't want her to get hurt. So there's this fine balance of, you know, training her, wanting to protect her, letting her do this because she really wants to do this. It's not him pushing the fighting on her. She wants to pursue this. And it's really interesting what they did when they portrayed the sign language. In this, they actually call it something different. I think it's called, let me see if I can find it real quick, if I'm not mistaken. They put it off and it was, yeah, it's called signing in Basel, which is Black Sign Language. So there's like culturally different dialects in the language that they use when they're signing, which is cool. But when they're signing, they actually have a speech bubble that has sort of like the sign, the universal sign language. So you know that they're signing and they're not speaking. And it's also a lightly different color. So you know when they're signing to one another and then you know when they're actually talking out loud because Adonis can actually hear and talk. The mom, because she lost her hearing, can actually talk. And the daughter just signs for pretty much the entire thing. So yeah, I mean, so basically you have that. And then what you end up having is sort of like this, a little bit of a heated rivalry between the father and the daughter because she wants to push forward onto the next level. And he's like, you're not ready. And it's not physically ready. It's sort of like mentally ready because of what she does in the ring with opponents that she finds that are easy to beat. There's this mentality thing. So her friend actually finds out that there's like this underground fighting league or whatever it is. And that she really wants to test herself that she can do that. So she ends up doing that. Somebody that knows Adonis tells him that she's doing this. She beats the crap out of it because it's co-ed. It's whoever's up next. Beats the crap out of this guy. She gets a black eye. And then all of a sudden, at the very end of that fight, there's a champion. What the hell's her name? Something, something. But she has like 50 knockouts or whatever. And she's like, if you want to take on some real competition, Jamie Pierce. She's called the Slayer. She's 15-0, 15 knockouts. And she's like, if you want, you know, real competition, then go for me. And we're looking at the year of 2032 is when she had her Golden Gloves champion. So this is in the future kind of thing. So right before that fight is about to happen, Adonis comes screaming, yeah, we're leaving right now, blah, blah. Yeah, you get it. So they have the little heated argument. She runs away. And then at the very end, we find out that she seeks out her aunt, which is sort of like her aunt is Adonis's half sister.
Okay. So
I don't know where the relation is yet. I got to figure that out. But her name is Artemis Creed. And she has, so I'm assuming that this is from the other mom that Apollo would have had Adonis with. Okay. So that's why they have brother and sister in that respect. So she's a previous champion. She seeks her out and says, you know, you're my aunt and I want you to train me. And that's how it ended because he's not training her anymore. So it's really sort of like this family quarrel that's going on and about this one kid's journey who wants to do something great where her father's already gone through it. And she wants to go through the same thing, but he's trying to be so protective of her that he doesn't want her to do what he or doesn't want her to go through what he went through because it was a lot rougher while he was growing up. And I think all parents can relate to that. I think anybody really can relate to that. Like your parents do something when they're young and your parents are telling you don't do that, even though they did it when they're young. And they kind of pass it down from every generation. So every generation, you know, has their hiccup, their mistakes, their failures, whatever it is that they're doing, whatever people think that is, you know, scrupulous or dangerous. And the parents are there to say, don't do that. Even though when they were young, they probably did that, if not worse. So it's just funny how we can kind of see that cycle in that comic. And it just kind of made me smirk, you know, here and there. I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to have to deal with this. Holy crap, I'm dealing with this right now kind of thing. So there is sort of like this, art imitating light kind of thing that happens in this book, which is really good. So I appreciate it. And if you've seen the movies, then a lot of already what's in the movies, there's context in the movies that just takes off from there. We're just being introduced to new characters from this Creed universe. So it'll be interesting to see if the next Creed movie kind of revels in this and pushes for her, because I think, you know, going 6 movies with Adonis is probably not the likely thing to do. Now that he has his daughter, and you saw sort of like at the end of Creed 3 that he was training her, that she may be the next part of that journey. And there's not a lot, if you think about it, in regards to IPs that have been around for a long time. I mean, we're looking since the 70s. So you can name probably just a few off the top of your head, right? You have, now you have Rocky. You have Star Wars, which was in the 70s. Star Trek. James Bond.
60s. Yeah, James Bond, yeah. 60s. Yeah, I mean, these are longevity franchises.
Right. And so there's a formula that needs to be hit in order for that longevity to occur and for it to have that shelf life. And if you think of every single one of those, they're different genres. You have sci-fi, you have action adventure, you have espionage, you have, with Rocky, you would have almost like a sport genre, boxing genre.
Yeah.
But there's something innate in each one of those genres that people relate to that allows that longevity to happen. And it's in every single one of the movies, and it hits it tonally. Like in James Bond, you know what you're going to get when you go to a James Bond movie. You're going to get a hot dude, hot chick, crazy gadgets, and explosions. That formula just works over and over and over. If you go to Star Wars, you know you're going to get the Force and some kind of like whatever battle between the good and the evil. Star Trek, it's funny. I was listening to this, someone talking. She thought that Star Trek and Star Wars were the same exact thing. And then you can see people in the background rolling their eyes and stuff. And where, you know, Star Trek is a space genre as well. It's so different from Star Wars. It's more cerebral.
It's more true science fiction, possible hopeful future for humanity, rather than Star Wars, which is a fantasy dressed up in sci-fi trappings and more of an adventure.
Correct. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's more cerebral. So there's a really thought process behind when you're watching those movies, which, you know what? I almost put on Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Do it.
The other day.
Do it.
I can't pull the trigger on that. I don't know if I want to waste 2 hours of my life. And where you have Star Wars, which is sort of like this big epic fantasy, and there doesn't have to be a lot of, you know, really in-depth story and heart there, even though we had those first couple of episodes were actually like that. But it's just a lot of, I would say it's like the James Bond of the sci-fi genre. Yeah. And then where you have Rocky, where, you know, this whole Rocky genre is really just about a lot of internal self-revelation as well, trying to overcome these different parts of your life. And if we look at from Rocky 1, you know, him trying to get out of whatever situation that he was in, just being, you know, this collector for the mob, to being this underdog, to be given this chance to be an underdog for, you know, to be a heavyweight champ. We get it. Second, you know, story is the same thing. Is, you know, was the first one a fluke? So the second one is, was it really a fluke? And the third one is where he actually has to face his own fear of another man because he's really scared of him. So he has to overcome that. Then 4 is seeing his friend die and overcoming that along with the next power. And then 5 is just when it came down over that because of Street Fighter. But there's always something to overcome, but he's growing and learning. Mm-hmm. Over each one. And I think that's where that formula hit. And when Creed hit, it's the same thing. And now we see it regurgitated here through another person, which is his daughter. So I really dug it. It's a 4-issue mini, so I'm going to ride it all the way to see how it goes. I don't know if there's going to be, you know, sort of like this million-dollar baby moment, which I would love for it to happen. So whether it happens to somebody in the family or it happens to somebody that's close, something that where the stakes are really, really high, that you can't come back from, that you have to move through and move forward from. Yeah. I don't think it's going to get that way, but I'm going to give it a shot. I liked it. So, yeah, if you guys watch the movies, you'll be right up on there. Creed from Boom Studios. Check it out.
So a couple things about the book. So if one were unfamiliar, let's say someone hadn't seen the Creed movies, right? Maybe hadn't even seen the Rocky movies. Is this accessible enough as an entry point to maybe get somebody to go back and check this stuff out.
Yeah, yeah, because it's just going to be a story about an ex heavyweight champ who's training his daughter. Yeah. And I respect there are some references. I don't think to Rocky itself, but kind of to like his past bouts. But you don't really need to have that because the story's not really about him; it's about her.
Right.
And she was only introduced into, and we really don't know anything about her. And this is her future. So we're looking at, you know, 10, 15 years in the future, in our respect. So, yeah, you can hop into it. The color palette's great. The art's great. I mean, the likenesses are pretty cool. I'm not usually a big fan of, like, likeness of real people. So it's not 100% spot on. It's almost like an imprint or a reimagining of them. But you can tell that it's them. So it's not like a lifelike representation. It really is sort of like a cartoony representation. So I really appreciated that.
And how is so it's an underground boxing, right? Not underground mixed martial arts. So it is strictly boxing with that they're covering as far as boxing, competing. Correct. Yeah. And how is the boxing portrayed in the comic? Is it
yeah, good? So the action, like, so the artist did a really good job with the action and portraying the actual movements of a boxer, the hits, and then the action and the way the action plays from like left to right and zigzags all the way down when they're in these action scenes. But like, if you look here, I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of stances there in and out. So yeah, it was really good. I mean, when you have something that's supposed to be about movement, but you're using a medium that's just stationary, it's really more about like what's going on in that story. So these moments of the fights happen within her internal dialogue. Because most of the story is her internal dialogue of, you know, how, what's going on in her life and where she's at right now, her relationship with her dad, and then what she wants to do. So she has a lot of energy and angst to want to be able to do this stuff, which is good. So, yeah, if you guys like, you know, sports genre stuff, if you've seen Creed, haven't seen Creed, I would definitely check it out.
And one of the things, it's funny how you talked about the Rocky saga, and from what I know about the Creed saga, one of the things that I love about Rocky is how his success, you through the course of the movies, and the one thing I like about Rocky V is how his success affects him, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's the mob enforcer in the first one. He gets some fame and notoriety in the second one from the fight in the first one. And then, you know, my favorite scene is where he goes to shoot the commercial. And he can't even see, he can't say, it makes me smile mainly. And the director gets frustrated. Like, I love how he buys the jacket with the tiger on the back and how he buys that collar for Buckus and how all he just like how it slowly changes Rocky over time. So that by the time you get to the third and fourth, I mean, he's living like a rich man, right? And he's not used to that, but he settles in. And then what I did like about Rocky V was that it brings it back. Like, he loses that money, and now he's back to where he was. And that's why I think, and that's like the only good thing about Rocky V. And then and by six, you kind of see how he is settled into being an old man, running his restaurant, sitting there telling the old glory days stories and things like that. And then also the on top of that is Rocky's growing relationship with his son throughout those movies. So I love this idea of how they do Creed's daughter and how that kind of tracks where in the second one the mom is pregnant and like by the end the kid is born, and the third one you see the kid as a kid, and now this is sort of that next step. And I love the big difference because Apollo's son Adonis went into boxing and now Adonis's daughter is going into boxing, whereas Rocky Jr. wanted to get as far away from that as possible. You know, and so I thought, and then comes together with his dad for that, you know, for that last one. But like, yeah, I think that that's really what I love about that is the familial aspect that we see in the Rocky saga and now in this Creed saga. And I think this is a great idea of doing this as a comic. And I hope this is something that they maybe can do as a movie, because I think it'd be a great, great idea.
I hope we get it. Yeah. And I mean, you could sit there and you could pick apart the movies and really just, you know, things will start to stick out, because in both sagas, the Rocky and the Creed saga, there's a groundedness, and that groundedness is with the women. So with Rocky's wife, with Adonis's wife, they keep them grounded and set in reality. So if you think about it, if Rocky would have never met Adrian, how different that movie would have been.
Yep.
Because, you know, in Rocky IV, he's not there mentally because he doesn't have her support. And all of a sudden she shows up and that light switch just turns on.
Yep.
And it's the same thing sort of like in Creed. She keeps him in check. So, yeah, so there's a whole bunch of things that are just really great. And, you know, this is an extension of that. So I love that it came out. So, yeah, core issue mini. I'm gonna stick with it. So it's going to be all good. All right, there you have it. So you have Bryn Mawr from IDW. And you also have Creed from Boom Studios. Check them out because they're wonderful. That is all that we have for you this week. Just remember that next week we have our Indie Creator Spotlight. Scott Ford is going to be on. It's going to be Thursday, July 6th. And I believe it's going to be at the same time. So 3 p.m. is what we're looking at. So if you want to, you know, hop in and check it out, or you can just watch the recording off of there as well. Yeah, make sure you click subscribe to our podcast, especially if you like what you're hearing, because we'll be here for the most part week to week, I like to think. If you want to join us, you want to be a guest on the show, like we have the guests that are coming upon us, amazingactioncomics.com/podcast, fill out the form. We'd love to have you on to promote you and or a project that you have coming up. Be sure to visit amazingactioncomics.com to stay up to date on everything that we've got going up. Smash Adam is absolutely superb. I'm actually going to send you copies, Phil.
Okay.
John, so that you can read it. This is Dino Caruso, who did Courage.
Cool.
Next thing that he has coming out, which is going to be at the end of this year. Really, really good stuff. We've got a ton of submissions that I'm going through right now as well. It's like we're going to get a couple of things that go on to our online library. We're starting to build that up as well. So, yeah, make sure you visit amazingactioncomics.com. Check out the online library where they have of growing books there. And print stuff is going to be coming out soon, so just stay up to date. Please support your local comic book shop, because without them, we would not have a job and you would not have comics. And we need them. Where do you get your comics from?
Well, I get my comics at The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. And yes, 4th of July weekend, we will be open. So come on down. Fridays 12 to 7, Saturday 12 to 5, Sunday 12 to 5, close Monday. But yes, open on 4th of July as well as 5th of July as well, Tuesday, Wednesday, next week. This is a very special weekend also because it is one of the owner's birthday. So if you come on by this weekend, be sure to give Len a very happy birthday wish. I wouldn't hug him, but, you know, you could try. But, yeah, come on, get all these great comics and more at The Joker's Child in Fairlawn, New Jersey. What better way to celebrate 4th of July than reading some independent comics, Angel?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I agree. Well, if you can't make it to Fairlawn, Jersey, make sure you visit your local comic book shop. All right, kiddies, that is all that we have for you today. So until next time, please be amazing, stay amazing, and read something amazing.